Hello, I'm Eric Topol, the editor-in-chief of Medscape, and I'm here and delighted to be here to do a discussion with Dr. Napoleon Ferrara. And Napoleon is a distinguished professor of pathology here at the University of California, San Diego. And what a record you've had in your career, not only winner of the Lasker Prize, the Economist Innovation, but most recently, the Breakthrough Prize in biomedicine. So we're going to get to that breakthrough prize because that just happened, I guess, this past week. But before we get to that, maybe we start off with you being an OBGYN training back in Italy. Can you tell us a little bit about those days in the way past?
Well, they're a long time ago, almost 3 decades ago, actually. I was a medical student at the University of Catania, actually, in southern Italy, in Sicily. Actually, I was very fortunate, you know, to have a mentor, a professor of pharmacology, actually, who guided me to research, you know, and you spent a number of years at UCSF, and so through him I was able to have a fellowship at UCSF. But before that, I started, you know, some clinical training in OBGYN. I was actually very interested in reproductive endocrinology, and that's why I started my this research fellowship at UCSF. And that's where my career started from.
Did you go to UCSF?
It was early 1983.
Okay, and then you went from UCSF to Genentech.
Yes, I did two different, you know, postdocs at into different labs at UCSF, and then in 1988 I joined Genentech.
And so when did you come upon the whole VEGF story? Kind of like your middle name, VEGF. Yes. How did you get into that whole area?
This was actually work that I did when I was a postdoc. The whole story began when I was a postdoc, you know, in my initial postdoc, you know, and with Dr. Richard Weiner at UCSF, you know. I was working on some pituitary cells, some very poorly known pituitary cells called folliculostellate cells. Even probably many endocrinologists may not even be that familiar with these cells because they are very poorly known. And actually, I discovered these cells were releasing some in the media, what at the time was a mysterious factor which induced, you know, endothelial cell growth, you know. And I thought it was really intriguing at the time. And I didn't know what to make it about the story. It could have been really nothing important. It could be really anything. But I was very curious, and I ended up, you know, following up, you know, the story. I did the second postdoc, you know, in a different lab, you know, where I learned some protein biochemistry, and I started, you know, I tried to isolate, you know, this factor. But it was, I must say, at Genentech that we complete, you know, this work. We were able, thanks to those wonderful facilities, state-of-art, you know, technology, we could, you know, sequence, you know, this molecule, which now is known as VEGF, you know, and then we clone, and we did all the things which characterize this factor over several years.
If you go back a couple of decades, could you ever have envisioned that curiosity would lead to what it did?
To be honest with you, it was a dream, it was a hope, but it would have been very, very difficult to imagine that. Because, first of all, it was not clear at all that, you know, working on folliculostellate cells, you know, even though you find something which is intellectually stimulating or interesting, you know, can have such a broad, you know, application, starting, you know, from a rather, for lack of a better word, obscure, you know, field, you know, to have, you know, this implication would have been certainly hard to imagine.
Okay, so now connect the dots. You make this discovery of what this, from these follicular rare or obscure cells, yeah. what they're, and then you eventually lead to Avastin and Lucentis and treatments for cancer and macular degeneration. So how do you go from that curiosity to changing the lives of so many people?
Well, to tell you the truth, I think because we found something which turned out to be very important, which is something, of course, you cannot, you know, predict. You know, VEGF certainly was not, you know, the first angiogenic factor to be discovered. Actually, there was some seminal idea in the field, you know, that angiogenesis is important, you know, in, of course, in embryonic development, etc. But there is the study done in the 40s by Michelson in postulating the existence of a factor produced by the retina, which was called factor X. You know, even before that, you know, there were some early studies, you know, postulating the existence of a tumor angiogenesis factor. So, in a way, one has to recognize that the biological context was already there. But, you know, people have tried many factors, you know, but you know, it seems that none of them, you know, seems to be particularly important. Like remember, the FGF, you know, family have been extensively investigated. But another bit that, you know, the knockout of FGF, you know, at least, you know, the original FGF, it does not have any vascular phenotype. So even though this molecule was very potent, you know, when applied exogenously, seems that endogenous did not play such an important role. Instead, it was very fortunate that actually the VEGF proved to be such an important molecule in angiogenesis.
What do you think led, it was just serendipity, or what do you think led this to be successful drug that's, of course, in routine medical practice for different indications?
Well, you know, I think it's a combination. Just first of all, you know, when you find something, you know, you need to be lucky, like, you know. But you know, I think I was very a little bit persistent.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Well, you were chipping away at it for many years.
Yeah, for many years. It took many years until we.
But were you frustrated along the way that you had this thing and you could see your way through as a therapeutic, but it wasn't getting legs? It didn't move fast enough?
Well, you know, the idea that could be, once again, the idea that could be a therapeutic relevant, you know, kind of was not obvious from the very beginning. It's something that we built over the years. You know, we did lots of fundamental research, biology. We did, you know, the knockout, you know. We studied, you know, the role of this molecule, you know, and all
so
the
you had this thing. You covered the waterfront, studying the biology in vivo. But what was it like when the very first patient was it a macular degeneration patient that was treated? You know, with
cancer patient.
A cancer. What was it like when you got the word that this was having an effect, or you say, "Oh, I knew that was going to work."
No, I think it was a really very, very, very long and kind of frustrating path, because actually there was some, like all the cancer trial, there was initially some phase one, and there was some very promising phase two, actually, which are sometimes they're not so predictive. But there was actually the first, you know, phase three in patients with relapse, you know, breast cancer. It was a negative trial, so it was incredibly frustrating. Mm, lots of people were ready, you know, to say the story is over. Fortunately, 6 months, about, you know, 6 months later, we got, you know, the results of this definitive phase three study in patients with the colon cancer, which at the time, to everybody's surprise, I dare say astonishment, given the negativity at the time, you know, it showed like a very significant survival benefit, you know. So that was great. That was certainly welcome, you know. But I would never taken anything like that for granted.
Sure, no, I can understand that. Yeah. Now, you obviously had a remarkable experience in a lab, wet lab. What is it like for you to kind of let go for the clinical trials to be done? You know, you really don't have that much input there.
Yeah.
You're not kind of steering that. Is that a sense of losing control of where this arc is going to go?
Well, you know, I don't know if I would say that, because you cannot do everything. I'm sure there were people who were much better at doing clinical trials than myself. But I think I was at least intellectually participating in that. You know, we discussed a lot. I was very fortunate, actually, at Genentech, to have some great colleagues, even in the clinical department.
So you could provide input for them.
Oh, yes.
Good,
we discussed the data, et cetera. So I think that was really very gratifying.
You're kind of the exemplar of translational medicine. I mean, you walk the walk. You go all the way from, you know, at the bench to treating how many hundreds of thousands, millions of patients. That's pretty extraordinary.
It's been very, very fortunate, you know.
Well, we're going to go to where you're going next, but first I want to get in a bit on this breakthrough prize. So you get this phone call from your old boss, Art Levinson.
Yeah.
When was that?
It was maybe 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. So, yes, and what was that like? What were you doing at the time?
I was actually in the evening. I saw an email from Art Levinson say that he wanted, you know, If I time you to talk with him, you know, within the next, you know, few days, so of course.
Next few days to call Art.
Yeah. No. And then I say, of course, Art, you know, I'm available, et cetera. Be very nice talking with you. Be happy to talk with you. And then, you know.
And, so, then and you have no idea what it's about,
no,
right?
No, I didn't have the slightest
and
idea.
And when did you finally hook up? Was it that evening?
The same evening.
Actually. You called him?
No, I left him my cell phone and he called me. And I was very, very surprised to hear what he had to say.
Yeah, so he said you won $3 million or something? How does he convey the news?
I think he first, you know, described, you know, this foundation or this prize. He first, you know, said that, you know, that the one that originated, you know, this idea was a Russian investor. His name is Yuri Milner, which actually physicist. Actually, last year he already gave, you know, a similar prize to 9 physicists, you know. But not being a physicist myself, I didn't know. I was unaware of that.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. Maybe it was Art's idea or some other people's idea. They thought to be a great initiative to have also a similar prize for life sciences.
Right.
Yeah.
So he says you win the prize.
Yeah.
You're one of the winners.
Yes, he said that. That was a little bit.
And did he say what the prize was?
He did. He did. You know, which, and that was the part that was particularly surprising.
So what was your reaction?
I know I was, of course, you know, a little bit, you know, incredulous, but you know,
did you think it was a joke?
No. Knowing Art, I didn't think for a moment. Art
so that he wouldn't joke like that. He's not a prankster.
I mean, it's not a prank, it's another setting. In my interaction with Art, he never made any jokes. He was a very serious person. Whatever you say, you can rely, you can take him very, very seriously.
So now, this is the biggest prize in life science in the world. Yeah. This is transcends the Nobel Prize, obviously has a limited heritage of the first annual, but are they going to do this every year, you think?
Yes, what they plan to do is to give it every year, but maybe with a fewer people, though. They will have 5 prizes, you know.
I see.
So actually, they all the awardees, you know, the 11 awardees agree to the essentially to be the selection committee for next year, and then, you know.
All the awardees are going to be on the selection committee.
Yeah.
Now, is it going to be a ceremony like Stockholm, where they give you a medal, or it's just a check?
I don't know exactly. I don't really know. I don't think they've decided yet whether they're going to have a ceremony, etc. I think they did, you know, for the physics, but I don't know.
Now, there's been some interest in this because some people say, well, these are the most accomplished scientists, researchers in the world, and if they really want to stimulate this field, they should not pick the ones who are the most successful. I disagree with that, but what are your thoughts on how this, I mean, it seems like a really great idea.
You know, maybe you need, you know, to start somewhere. I think then in the future, I think, first of all, the fact that there is an open nomination system, et cetera, that is makes things a little bit, you know, different, you know. So I believe there will be an emphasis on picking people which are, they have an extremely promising career, like as a so-called, you know, rising stars, rather than very accomplished people. But then, of course, time will tell.
Sure. Yeah. Now let's go back to, so you moved to UCSD just in January this year.
Yes.
And what are your plans? I'm sure there are big plans because you only think big. What would you like to accomplish here?
Well, I have a role, you know, in the Morris Cancer Center. Actually, my other title, besides being a faculty in pathology, I'm a senior deputy director for basic science, you know, in the Morris Cancer Center. So I hope to have a little bit of help, you know, in just, you know, in some research direction, maybe in recruiting people, maybe building, you know, some basic science, basic research program. But that would be certainly one of the goals. But I believe my primary goal is to have, you know, set up, you know, my lab, you know, to have a productive lab, you know, and this is what I'm doing. I would like very much to continue in the line of research that I've done so far, you know, on angiogenesis, you know, and actually the clinical success, you know, with the drugs on the market like Avastin and Lucentis, and there are other VEGF inhibitor. It taught a lot of lessons. We understood, you know, some many things, but also we understood the limitation of these drugs. Where some patients do not respond, you know, some patients become resistant. It would be certainly wonderful to have a greater understanding of this process, such that we can develop additional strategies and novel targets.
So, the therapeutic angiogenesis field, where is that going to go next, do you think?
Oh, that's a great question, Eric, because I remember a decade, maybe over 10 to 15 years ago, there was lots of excitement about therapeutic angiogenesis, which is giving an angiogenic factor and make new vessels to treat limb ischemia or coronary ischemia. And actually, much of this excitement, you know, faded essentially because most of the clinical trials were negative. I believe that people were a little bit, you know, too optimistic, you know, think that just, you know, a single administration, very few administration of an angiogenic factor could recreate, you know, this functional vascular supply, etc. So the field has had lots of setbacks and not nearly as advanced as the anti-angiogenesis field. But, you know, nevertheless, I think there is hope, you know, as we understand more about, you know, vascular biology. It will be very clear that we have some appropriate formulation which can sustain the release of angiogenic factors, etc. That's, in a way, it may be that, you know, the field will, will have some advances, you know.
So, some of the lessons I'm getting from our discussion, you know, obviously been a master innovator, but it doesn't come easy, right? It takes a tremendous amount of dogged persistence, kind of being indefatigable. Is that what you would say?
I think, yes, it takes persistence. You need to be in a good place, in a good environment, which kind of is conducive to do this research. And yes, I think all these things are very important.
Now, what do you do when you're not making great discoveries and changing medicine? What do you do for fun?
Well, I'm a very, very, very simple things. I love traveling, etc. I love, you know, I enjoy photography. I'm actually a little bit, you know, more and more involved in these things. I like having a motorcycle aficionado. I was since the day when I was in Italy, and this is a place for wonderful itineraries.
Oh, ideal for that.
Exactly.
You get out on the beach at all, or?
Not yet, because I grew up in a beach town essentially.
Yeah.
So this is going back a little bit, you know, to my roots, but you know, I've not had yet, you know, the opportunity to do so.
Oh, well, it's so wonderful to have you here in San Diego. What a fantastic addition, and I know the university is exceptionally proud, as they should be. So it's been great to have this discussion with you and to learn about what got you to this exceptional point.
Thank you very much, Eric.
So it's been fantastic to have a chance to visit with Napoleon Ferrara, one of the most model physician investigators in the world. And so this has been a really fun Medscape one-on-one segment. Thanks so much for joining us. Thank you, Napoleon.
Thank you.